So this talk is going to be on modeling of emission trading schemes. What we in particular focus on is the modeling of allowance prices, modeling of electricity prices in these markets, but also the modeling of allowance prices related to CR prices under different regulations. And one application that we will see of this is also how to design the markets to get, for example, lower windfall profits. We look at taxes. We look at auctioning of allowances. And the work that I present is work together with Hans-Jakob Lüthi, with René Carmona, with Yuri Hinz, with Arnaud Pochet, and now recently with Pauline Barrieux and Umut Setin. So let me first explain how emission trading works. I consider therefore a system of emitters, for example these two companies, Company A and Company B, and we assume that they emit 11,000 tons CO2 in a scenario without emission regulation. Now a cap and trade scheme is used to set a total cap on the system of emitters. So this could be, for example, these 20,000 tons CO2 for both companies together. And thereby, a certain amount of allowances corresponding to this cap is given to each market participant. And each allowance allows the owner to emit one ton CO2. If he emits more CO2 than he possesses allowance, he has to pay a penalty. And to emit this penalty, the agents have two possibilities. Either they can trade allowances with other agents, or they have to reduce their emissions. So let me illustrate this as a small example. Assume first that we don't have, or assume that these two companies have different reduction costs. So let's say that Company A has a reduction cost of €5 per ton CO2, and Company B has a reduction cost of €11 per ton CO2. Now, in the case without emission trading, the regulator could allow both companies to emit 10,000 tons CO2 to reach this emission target. So, in this case, Company A has to reduce its emission by 1,000 tons, and Company B has to reduce its emission at 1,000 tons. So this comes at a cost of €5,000 for Company A and €11,000 for Company B. Now, in the case of emission trading, the regulator could give both companies 10,000 allowances, and since these may be traded, they find another optimal outcome. Namely, Company A reduces its emission by 2,000 tons. Company B reduces nothing, it still emits these 11,000 tons, but it can buy 1,000 allowances from Company A at some equilibrium price which lies between the reduction cost of Company A and between the reduction cost of Company B. So let's say €8 per ton CO2, then the cost for Company B are €8,000 for this compliance or to reach its target. On the other hand, the cost of Company A are only €2,000 because they reduce 2,000 ton emission at €5 per ton, so that's €10,000, and they sell allowances for 8,000 tons, so the total cost are €2,000. So we see that these two companies together are better off than in the case without emission trading. In fact, under this allocation, both companies are better off, but that's not the case in general. And this social optimality is probably one of the main reasons why these schemes are so popular and are introduced today. However, this social optimality does not imply that the scheme is cheap for the end consumer. Namely, in the first phase, or today in the European emission trading scheme, we see that the electricity price increased a lot. So what the cost transfer to the end consumer are actually higher than the actual reduction costs in the market. And the reason for this is that the allowances are priced into the electricity as if they would be an extra commodity to produce electricity, which is quite natural. And because the allowances are given for free, this argument is not totally correct. We'll see that later. They make these huge windfall profits in these markets. So we can see this price dependence between electricity and allowance price in the following plot. We see here the allowance price process in several European power futures from January 2006 to July 2006. So the dark blue one is the German peak load future, and then we have a German baseload future, and this is the Nord Pool baseload future. And what is interesting to us is this price drop, which occurred in April 2006, when some days before the true-ups, when it came out that the market was over-allocated with allowances. And with this information, the allowance price dropped by €18, and the futures price is followed by drops of €9 each. So it seems that the allowance price enters the electricity price with the factor one has. So, and this is also the average emission factor that you have in Germany. So if you produce 1 megawatt hour of electricity, in average you emit 1/2 a ton CO2. So it seems that the producers charge the end consumers for the allowances they have to offset, even though they were given for free, and this gives rise for the huge windfall profits in these markets. So the primary aim of this talk is to explain this price relation between electricity prices, between allowance prices, but also in particular to fundamental price drivers such as the demand in the market and the fuel prices in the market. And in the end, we will also see how to relate them to the CR prices in the market. And also how CR prices are related to the allowance price. It's not one, it's an interplay between both. So one of the lessons we learn from this is how to design an emission trading scheme to reduce the windfall profits in the market, or to get a little bit lower electricity prices. Not a little, but to get lower electricity prices. And the what was discussed, or the measures that are proposed today are mostly tax schemes and auctioning, or mostly the auctioning actually, to reduce the windfall profits. We will see in this talk, we'll look at a case study for Japan, and we will see that even a tax can fail to reduce the windfall profits to a reasonable level. And we show that the tax is not suited to reach an absolute reduction target in the case of stochastic reduction costs. Also, we will see that in the case of auctioning, even for 100% auction, zero windfall profits cannot be reached in markets with a lot of clean production capacity. So first, I will introduce the stochastic model for intertemporal allowance electricity price formation. We will see that there exists equilibrium allowance and electricity price processes. We will show that they are unique. We will show how to compute them. Then we will use these results to compare different climate policies. The policy that we will look at is a standard emission trading scheme, an emission trading scheme with auction of all allowances, an emission tax, and the relative emission trading scheme, which is also called the generation performance standard. And in the end, we will look at how ETS is related to CR and to the specific banking and penalty regulations in the ETS. So the talk is based on the following literature. It's most of all, it's based on this paper, Market Design for Emission Trading Schemes, that I wrote together with René Carmona, with Jure Hint and Arnaud Pochet. It is the last part of the talk will be based on the paper Clean Development Mechanism and Joint Price Formation of Allowance and CRs. It's a paper that I wrote together with René. Then we have the case study that comes from the paper Properly Designed Emission Trading Schemes to Work. And in the end, I will say some words about the new paper that we're writing. We don't have a title yet, but it's on option pricing in UTS. It's together with Pauline Barrieux and the Moussetti. Some directly related literature are the following papers. It's Pricing and Hedging Carbon Emission Markets by Moussetin and Verschure. Then we have the paper Dynamic Behavior of Carbon Spot Prices by Homburg, Seifert and Wagner. I think we'll hear more about that later, probably. And then there are the papers that were mentioned yesterday by Chenet and Luca Taschini. So let me first explain the precise regulation of UETS. So UETS is divided into three compliance periods. First, the test period from 2005 to 2007, the Kyoto period from 2008 to 2012, which we are in now, and then the after Kyoto period from 2013 to 2020. During each year, each agent faces stochastic emissions, and he gets an initial allocation of allowances. And if the amount of allowances that he submits for compliance is lower than the emissions, he would have to pay a penalty. However, during the period, he can borrow allowances from next year's allocation, and he can bank allow excess emissions in 1 year. So for example, these excess emissions here can be banked to the next year. So de facto, you pay the penalty only at the end of the compliance period. Now, the regulation is more complicated like that. You do not only have to pay a financial penalty, you also have to hand in allowances for the excess emissions in the next year. So in 2008, you have to hand in, or let's say in 2013, you have to hand in your excess emissions in terms of allowances for 2013, for 2012. And what makes it even more complicated is that now you can also use CRs, the allowances from the Clean Development Mechanism, for compliance up to a certain amount. So in the first part of the talk, we will look at the simple regulation. It's more or less what you saw yesterday. It's markets where we only have a financial penalty. That's because we will look at Because this is easy to introduce, and because we will look at market design, and for the questions that we will ask, this setting is enough. However, late, if you want to price options or anything in these markets, you need a more sophisticated model, and we'll look at some ideas how to do this later. So the goal is to determine allowance and electricity price processes based on a fundamental equilibrium model. To this end, we need following modeling gradients. First, we fill the probability space to which all processes that we will see are adapted. We have a penalty that is paid for each ton of CO2 that is not covered by allowances. We have an agent because electricity markets are the most important markets in UETS. We will mostly think of electricity producers when we talk about the agents. However, this model is more general than that. So we assume that every agent is given a certain initial credit of emission allowances that sum up to the initial allocation. And those agents who are electricity producers may have different technologies to produce electricity. So for each technology J, each agent I has different costs to produce electricity, and these costs are given by stochastic processes Pij. And these are basically the fuel price processes, the coal price processes, and the gas price processes in the market. Also, we assume, it's clear that each technology has different emissions, and these emissions are measured in tons of CO2 per megawatt hour for each technology J. Furthermore, we assume that there are agents in the market who face emissions due to other activities than scheduled electricity production. This could be, for example, for providing reserve capacity in these markets, and this reserve capacity is called totally stochastically, and we measure it as an F capital T measurable random variable. Last but not least, also the market electricity demand enters our model. And now the allowance price process and the electricity price process that we want to obtain are related to these quantities by the trading and the production strategies in these markets. And these are first the trading strategy theta. They give at the end of the compliance period the following P&L. The P&L from trading allowances minus the cost for taking the final position or for surrendering PET-IP allowances for compliance. Secondly, we have the production policies. They are zero lambda I J value, which means that each power plant J of agent I has a maximum power output. This gives at the end of the compliance period a total emission, which is given by the emission factor, sampling production intensities in the market, and the P&L, which comes from electricity production, which is given by the electricity spot price, ST, minus the production cost, times the production intensity. So each agent manages the following P&L. It's the cost for, it's the P&L from trading, the cost for taking the final position, the P&L from producing and selling electricity, and a penalty payment, which is due in the case that the uncontrolled emission plus the emission from electricity production exceeds the surrendered amount of allowances. So now, if allowance price process and electricity price processes would be given, we assume that agents select the trading and the production strategies in such a way that they optimize their expected P&L. So we do not look at risk-averse agents. So it's clear that in these markets, the allowance and electricity price processes should be settled such that the trading strategies and the production, or such that the production strategies satisfy the market electricity demand, and the trading strategies sum up to the initial allocation. So this leads us to the following equilibrium definition. We characterize the equilibrium by allowance and electricity price processes A star and S star, such that the individual optimal production strategies satisfy the market's electricity demand, meaning that if the agent sees these allowance and electricity price processes, they select their production strategies such that they sum up to the demand in the market at all time points, almost surely, and all individual optimal allowance positions sum up to the initially allocated credit. So, to characterize the equilibrium, we define the following representative planner problem, where the objective function is given by the total production cost in the market and the total penalty payments in the market. And the feasible set over which we optimize is given by all the production strategies that satisfy the market's electricity demand almost surely at all time points. So this optimization problem is to satisfy the market electricity demand at lowest over cost, including the fuel cost and the penalty payments for the trading scheme. So the first step to prove or to construct the equilibrium is to prove that these production policies psi star actually exist. And this is an application of standard topological arguments, which we carried out in this paper, Market Design for Emission Trading Schemes. When we have this policy psi star, we can construct the allowance and electricity price processes in the following way. So the allowance price process is given by the marginal reduction cost in the market, the marginal utility for an extra allowance in the market. And this marginal utility is just that the allowance reduces your penalty payment in the case of non-compliance. So it should be given by the penalty times the probability that the market is short of allowances at the end of the compliance period. So this gamma T is just the short position that you have if you run your optimal policy psi star, which comes out of the optimal control problem. Moreover, the electricity price, the equilibrium electricity price, is given by the marginal production cost in the market. And these include not only the fuel costs, but also the costs for allowances weighted by the emission factor of the most expensive technology that is needed to satisfy the electricity demand if we follow this optimal policy psi star. So we see that this is actually the explanation for the relation of allowance and electricity price process that we saw before. We see that the allowance price enters the electricity price with an emission factor. And however, they are related over these strategies psi star, which come out of the optimal control problem. And also we see that if we don't have an emission trading scheme, if the emission factors are zero, then we end up in a normal merit order pricing. That's true. That's what we assume. And so.
See, the problem is if someone were opposed to this, you would say you're forcing an assumption that there are no economic consequences.
Yeah. So actually, there are two types of demand, or two types of elasticity. The one is the short term, it's the one that you see on the exchange, and this elasticity is not there, right? But the question is if there is some long-term elasticity. And actually, if you look at these reduction cost curve of McKinsey, you see that most reduction costs in the market that are related to electricity markets are actually already negative. So they are all, like, quite often they're like minus $50 per ton of CO2. So you would carry out these measures anyway. If you have an emission trading scheme and this increases the carbon price by $10, $15, it will not trigger more emissions. I mean, there are other reasons that these reductions are not carried out. So I think at least these guys who wrote this or who made this reduction cost study, they believe that there is not a lot of elasticity in these markets. So therefore, I think it's reasonable to assume it here. But it would be nice to have a model with elasticity, but we didn't cover that. Okay, so in the paper we also prove that these equilibrium allowance price processes are almost truly unique, and we prove something similar to uniqueness, that the electricity price process S star is the smallest equilibrium price in the sense for any other equilibrium price S bar, S star is smaller or equal than S bar, almost surely. Okay, so now the difficult thing here is to compute this global optimal control problem. So we have a stochastic demand, we have stochastic fuel costs, and we have to solve this optimal production schedule for the whole compliance period. So we do this in the following way. This global optimal control problem cannot be solved exactly, so we solve a discrete version by backward induction on a trinomial forest. Our trinomial forest does not look this simple. And then we use this discrete version to interpolate a version, a feasible solution for this original optimal control problem. So the solution that we get will not be the optimal solution, but we can control the error by narrowing the grid, and we can narrow the grid by introducing intermediate time points to this tree-building procedure. So we see we have a coarse grid with, and we have the narrow grid with a lot of intermediate time steps. And now we can actually measure the error that we get depending on the intermediate time steps that we use. And to this, we need the dual problem. So the primal problem is actually a lower bound for our value, and the dual problem is an upper bound. It's the wrong way around here, because this plot is for an infimum problem, not for the negative. So the difficulty here is to show that the duality gap between the primal and the dual problem is zero, and this is difficult because we are in an infinite dimensional space, and our primal value space is L infinity, and we want the dual space to be L1. So it's quite a lot of work to show that the duality gap is zero, and it is only possible because we have very nice properties of these emission markets. Actually, the property that is crucial here is that if you perturb your constraints, then you know that the optimal value will not change more than the penalty times some factor, and this makes the topological arguments work in the end. So now we use these results and these numerics to compare different climate policies, and we look at the Japanese electricity sector to do this. So in the end, we will compare the standard emission trading scheme, the emission trading scheme with auctioning, an emission tax, and a relative emission trading scheme, a generation performance standard. So we look at the Japanese electricity market, and we assume that it is covered by an emission trading scheme, as I showed before. And we assume that it has a penalty of $100 per ton CO2 and a reduction target of 20% of business usual emissions. So this is a serious reduction target. We also assume that all reductions come only from coal and gas switches. So usually in electricity markets, at least if the dark spread is lower than the spark spread, then you use coal to produce the base load and gas to produce the intermediate load. Now during a fuel switch, you can interchange these two. You put the gas in the base load, coal in the intermediate load, and this takes a lot of CO2 because coal emits like twice as much CO2 as gas does for the same amount of electricity that you produce. However, this comes at extra cost, and these costs are given by the spread of coal and gas times the different heating rates and emission factors. And this spread is actually it's called the climate spread. So it's the difference between a clean dark and the clean spark spread. And this climate spread is one of the most important price drivers in the ETS. And it's clear. I mean, we study we started with these models just to explain the relation between this climate spread to the allowance price. And this relation is non-trivial, and we saw it's related over the stochastic over optimal control problem.
So is the assumption that you can turn on a coal-fired plant
to save the
use of the gas-fired
plant? More or less. So what we say is that at least on a weekly basis or on a daily basis, sometimes even on a daily basis, you can decide whether to use gas or coal in the intermediate load. Even if you don't switch off your coal plant, totally, you can run it at lower production intensity. It depends a lot on coal plants. For example, for lignite plants, this is really hard. But for hard coal plants, this is possible, and it is done in Europe at least. So if we simulate the market for 1 year, we can compute the penalty payments for the total market, the reduction cost for the market, the consumer cost is blue histogram, and the windfall profit is red histogram. We see that the penalty payments are nearly zero, so we neglect them. If we look at the reduction cost, we see there are only $2 to $3 per megawatt hour of electricity that's produced in the market. So what I do is I take the total reduction cost and I divide them by the total amount of electricity produced in the market. We see this is astonishingly low. It's for a 20% reduction target with only one reduction measure, which is these coal and gas switches. and the reduction costs are very low for this market. The reason is that in Japan, the coal price is relatively high because you have to import all the coal. So therefore, the spread between coal and gas is not very high, and therefore you have these quite low reduction costs. On the other hand, you see that the consumer costs are nearly $15 per megawatt hour, so then about 6 or 7 times higher than actual reduction cost in the market, and this gives rise to these huge windfall profits in the market. So several schemes have been proposed to reduce these windfall profits. So first the tax scheme, then to auction the allowances, and also the generation performance standard, which was discussed in the US for a while. The tax, so if you look at the P&L, so all these schemes are more or less covered in this setting that we discussed, or can be covered by extending the setting that we saw before. The tax scheme is reached by introducing this factor TET and EIJ. So for each amount of electricity that you produce, you have to tax, you are taxed for its emissions. The generation performance standard, the relative scheme, means that for each megawatt hour of electricity that you produce, you get a certain amount of allowances. So this is covered by the following term: if you produce a certain amount of electricity, you get Y allowances. And if you do this, you have to compensate your initial allocation, so you have to reduce your initial allocation and give to be able to give some relative allocation and reach the same reduction target. So we calibrate the schemes to the same, or to compare the schemes under fair conditions, we choose the parameters such that the reduction target of 20% is reached with 95% probability, that is the emission distribution that have the same 5% quantile. So we see here the emission distribution of the standard scheme, this blue histogram, it's very narrow, just below the emission target of 300 megatons, 300 gigatons for this market. And on the other hand, we see the tax scheme has a very broad distribution, so it has a very long tail, so to reach the same emission target, it has to be centered far below the emission target. So in average, it reduces the emissions much more than the standard scheme. However, this comes out at much higher cost, as we will see on one of the next slides. On the other hand, and the reason for this broad distribution is that if you have a market with stochastic reduction costs and you have a fixed tax, then the tax triggers the reduction in a totally stochastic way. So you can't control your emissions with the tax if your reduction costs are stochastic. So it's probably not the best way to regulate an electricity market. For the relative scheme, we see that the emission distribution is just a little bit broader than for the standard scheme, and we can control control the different parameters such that the emission target is reached. If we look at the reduction cost of the different schemes, we see the standard scheme and the relative scheme, they have more or less the same cost. However, we see the tax scheme because it reduces the emissions much more, has twice as high reduction cost as the standard scheme. I mean, it's not, yeah?
What do you mean by stochastic abatement costs, stochastic reduction costs?
So in this case study, the reduction costs are the spread between coal and gas.
Okay.
And so,
right.
Okay. Okay, so I mean, it's clear, the tax can reduce out the emissions much more, however, if you want to reach a certain target, it's very expensive. If you look at the windfall profits in the different markets, we have here the business usual emission windfall profits, here the windfall profits in the tax scheme, the windfall profits if you auction all your allowances, and these are the windfall profits for the relative scheme. So you see the windfall profits for the relative scheme they are very narrow and centered around zero. So we can really control the windfall profits with this relative scheme. However, with the auction scheme, this is for 100% auction. The windfall profits are still $5 per megawatt hour. So, and for the tax scheme, we see the windfall profits are still like $7 per megawatt hour. So we see that both the auctioning and tax are not able to reduce the windfall profits to zero, and the reason is because we have so much nuclear capacity in Japan. So if you have a lot of nuclear capacity, if you have a nuclear power plant and you introduce an emission trading scheme, this emission trading scheme increases the electricity price. So if you have a nuclear power plant, you make these windfall profits, but you don't have to buy allowances in the auction, and you don't have to pay the tax, and that's the reason why you can't recover the windfall profits in Japan. Now, if you look at the consumer burden, this the difference of the prices that the electricity that the consumers have to pay under under the emission trading scheme and in business as usual, we see the same picture. The consumer burden is nearly zero for the relative scheme. It's for the auction scheme, it's the same as the standard scheme if you don't redistribute the money. And for the tax scheme, it's even higher. $20 per ton per megawatt hour. So this is the taxing is really expensive for this market if you want to reach a certain emission target. So now the model that we looked at before was the stylized model where we only pay a penalty at the end of the compliance period. And this is definitely not the case. This is not what we have in the UETS. So if you want to model the UETS and model the CR price dynamics in the European Union emission trading scheme, you have to do the following. So for CRs, the prices are driven first by the supply in the market, but also by the marginal compliance cost of the different markets that link to the CDM. So if you want to build a fundamental equilibrium model as we did before for the clean development mechanism, you have to include a finite number of emission trading schemes that link indirectly to the CDM. And René and I made the first attempt to model this, to build such a model in the paper, The Clean Development Mechanism and Joint Price Formation for Allowances and CRs. What we model there is, we consider several emission markets, for example, the European, the UETS, a US scheme, and the Japanese emission trading scheme. Or it's more general, but you can think of these, and we assume that they are indirectly linked to the CDM. And this indirect link means that they are not allowed to use the allowances of each other. So if in the Japanese scheme, you cannot use European allowances, but they can all use the CRs. So it can happen that the price is coupled together, however, only indirectly over the CRs. So in this paper, we assume that they have the same compliance regulations as in UETS. We assume that in case of non-compliance, excess emissions have to be covered in the next period, and also financial penalties due for each ton CO2 that is not covered by allowances. Moreover, we assume that banking of both allowances and CRs is allowed without restriction on the amount that you bank, and you are allowed to use a certain amount of CRs for compliance in these markets, and this amount is restricted by some constant kappa. Moreover, we assume that we have risk-neutral agents that can apply a reduction in trading strategies, that trade in allowances, and they trade in allowances and CRs for several compliance periods at the same time. So they don't trade spot, but they trade forwards in these markets. Moreover, they can apply short-term reduction measures, for example, the fuel switching, and they can apply long-term reduction measures, such as refurbishing a power plant, or invest in projects under the clean development mechanism. Yeah? Ah, 5 minutes, okay. okay, so the results that we get, I mean, it's clear we cannot make a numerical simulation of these markets too big because we have all these schemes that are linked together, and we have all these compliance periods. However, we get some theoretical results. We can show that there exists allowance in CR price processes. We can again show that they are unique, and we get the characterization for the short-term optimal reduction policies and for the long-term optimal reduction policies.
I have one question. What's the CDM? Is it a mechanism for trading CRs?
No, sorry. So the clean development mechanism is a mechanism. It's
that's what it's claimed about.
Right. Should I explain how it works, or?
Well, yes or no. Only if it's short.
I think I can do this shortly. So in the clean development mechanism, you can invest in a reduction project in the third world, and then they measure your emission reduction with respect to a baseline, and they give you the residual as emission allowances. And these emission allowances are called CRs, and they can use up to some extent for compliance in the Kyoto Protocol, but also for compliance in the UETS and in the Japanese scheme, for example. So the result that we are interested in is how the allowance prices in different periods and the CR prices in different periods relate to each other. So let's talk about the 2008 to 2012 face of UTF. It's easier for the notation. Then the allowance price is given by next period's allowance price. So these are the values without prime are the allowance in CRs for 2012, and these are allowance in CRs for 2013. So the allowance price for the first period is given by allowance price for the next period plus the penalty in the case the market is non-compliant at the end of the compliance period. So this is because you have this penalty regulation that you have to hand in the allowances for the next period if you are non-compliant. What is more interesting is this term. So it's in the case that you are compliant, but in the case in the event M, which is the event that the compliance can only be reached if you use CRs in your market, then the allowance price couples to the CR price, to the next period's CR price, if next period's CR price is higher than the next period's allowance price. Okay? So it's interesting. So we see that this spread option between CR price and allowance price will be important for the allowance price in this period. The CR price is given, is somewhat similar. It's given by the CR price for the next period plus the correction term that makes it coupled to the allowance price in the case that the amount of CRs that you have in the market is smaller than your kappa, than smaller than the amount of CRs that you are allowed to use in your market. So based on this model, I work right now with Pauline Barrière and Lou Moussatine on option pricing in UTS, and we try to build an arbitrage-free model on these formulas that we saw before. And for this model, we get closed form formulas, meaning that we get the allowance price, the CR price are obtained in closed form depending on the price drivers in the market. So we can compute the allowance CR prices fast, so we can calibrate them implicitly to the allowance CR price in the market, but also to the spread option that we saw before, which is quite important for the correlation between allowance and CR prices. So in my eyes, what is crucial when building a model for these markets is to get the correlation right of the allowance and the CR. So here we see the historical price processes for allowance and CRs from May 2008 to March 2010, and this correlation is non-trivial because it comes out of the compliance regulation. So in theory you would expect a very special correlation structure. So you can use in UTS, you can decide whether to use the allowance and or CR. So you can exchange the CRs and the allowances up to some extent. So at the end of the compliance period, you expect that at least in some, or with a positive probability, the prices will glue together. However, in other cases, when they don't glue together, there's basically no reason that they should be correlated. So it's quite hard to get the structure right, get everything arbitrage-free, and at the same time get closed form formulas. But that's what we do in this paper. And I think this correlation is not only, so at first sight, if you look at this, you think, okay, the correlation between allowance and CRs is most important if you want to price spread options on allowance and CRs, right? But as you saw before, the spread option will be important for the connection of allowance price between the different periods. So therefore, this correlation is crucial. Okay, so in this talk we saw, okay, so I'm running out of time, so let's conclude. These papers give the theoretical foundation and the numerical foundation to analyze the cap and trade schemes in a stochastic setting. That's what we saw in the first part. We applied these results to show assets and drawbacks of the different policy designs and showed how to design schemes with low windfall profits. And in the end, we also looked at how ETFs and CRs are related to each other and how the banking these penalty regulations influence the allowance prices. Okay, thank you.
We have been harassed by economists who say, why would you want to control windfall profits?
Yeah.
Did you make any progress? Finding an answer.
Yeah, I mean, the basic argument there is that you want to have the elasticity in the market, right? And or that you say you want to have the correct demand response in the electricity market. So you want the allowance price to be priced into electricity so that people save electricity and do these measures. However, it seems that at least if you talk to these people from the cost curve that there will not be a lot of demand response. So what you do basically is you make electricity expensive, but you don't save anything. And yeah. So in theory, it's good to have the windfall profits, but in practice, in this market, it's just expensive.
Because in fact, in nuclear, you just made huge windfall profits in France because of this mechanism. And in fact, it was pointing out since we have already a dominant position, it was giving money to someone who has already a dominant position, and it was pointing out, showing that it was undue profit.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but.
There are two things. There are the distribution of the allowances. Yeah. We have got allowances for free, yeah. And there is the fact that because the carbon allowance is clean, you got positive windfall profit, independently of the fact that you were given or not allowances.
Yeah.
But the point is that when you try to minimize windfall profits, you think the point of view of the social responsible planner, while the economist says here, if companies cannot make profit, they're not going to enter this market, they're not going to produce electricity, they're going to do something else. Sell banana republic shirts or something like this? No. So why would you want to reduce the for profit at all cost? How do you deal with it?
No. So politicians are concerned about this, and they propose schemes to reduce the windfall profit. Right? They want to have the auctioning, they want to have taxes. So this is just to analyze if it is possible to reduce the windfall profit or not. If you apply this measure, I don't know. I mean, I'm not the one to decide if we should have windfall profit or not. Right? But it's just to look to analyze the market, see what you can do, what you don't, what you can't do.
Thank you, Max.